It doesn't. Mission.
You're listening to This Week in Radio News. Radio news about radio waves, radio art, and more. I'm Tom Rowe, your host, and we'll travel across the ether to hear what's going on in radio news. Harry Cole at the ComLaw blog reports that though the Federal Communications Commission approved net neutrality in February and published the report in order last month, there are challenges from opponents at the FCC and some U.S. Court of Appeals to be determined. First, petitions for review filed with the courts need to be filed by those opposed by June 12th, and petitions for reconsideration have to be filed by May 13th. As of May 9th, Cole reports, the FCC's ECFS system was not showing any petitions for reconsideration on file. In the courts, a number of appeals have already been filed against net neutrality, all jockeying for different courts. So far, the Judicial Panel on Multidistrict Litigation pulled the D.C. Circuit ping-pong ball out of the official lottery drum, so the court that ruled against previous versions of net neutrality may be hearing the case again. There may be a second drawing, though, after 10 more petitions for review were filed. The FCC believes that the net neutrality appeal will eventually be heard in the D.C. Circuit. Cole writes, quote, "Why would the FCC prefer D.C.? Perhaps because even though the Commission's net neutrality efforts did not fare well there the first two times, the FCC's most recent open Internet effort was essentially designed to follow directions implicit in the D.C. Circuit's last net neutrality decision. The Commission may therefore be figuring that if it can convince the D.C. Circuit that the FCC's latest iteration tracks the D.C. Circuit's Verizon decision closely enough, that may do the trick," unquote. So net neutrality remains the law of the land, at least until the courts can decide where the lawsuits will play out. Read the full story at the ComLaw blog. May 12th is the Federal Communication Commission's deadline for public comments on a few large broadcasters' proposal to legalize payola, pay-to-play advertisements for new music on the radio. Currently, payola is actually legal. Record companies are allowed to pay radio stations to play certain songs as long as the radio station identifies immediately that the song was paid for by the record company. The big broadcasters from iHeartMedia, formerly Clear Channel, Entercom, and Cumulus Media want to change the rules so that, eventually, a station would air a single announcement, probably very, very early in the morning, saying that some of the songs you heard were paid for by a few companies. The broadcasters provided this example announcement that would air on the radio if the proposal was passed. Quote, "Some of the music and or sports programming that you hear on this station is sponsored and or paid for by Interscope, Sony, Universal Records, or the Washington Nationals. For additional information, please visit our website at," and then gave a generic website address, a generic physical address, a generic email address, and a generic phone number. You can make actual comments to the FCC website at fcc.gov under FCC Media Bureau docket number 15-52. Federal Communications Commission has a $388 million proposed budget, up $13 million from this year's and up nearly $30 million from 2 years ago. The new budget is the largest ever, and Wheeler explained why May 12th at a Senate Financial Services and General Government Subcommittee hearing about the FCC's budget. Wheeler is being criticized for spending too much and also not enough, as the proposal would close a number of FCC field offices and reduce by half the number of enforcement agents. The Society of Broadcast Engineers sent Wheeler a letter May 12th saying, quote, "It is SBE's view that the draconian cuts proposed now will have a substantially adverse effect on compliance in virtually all radio services." Here is Wheeler speaking at the budget hearing.
"Our current reality is that we are paying too much in rent, that we have inefficient field operations, that we're missing the ability to use technology to reduce costs, and that we're burdening fee payers for benefits they don't receive while at the same point in time risking the Universal Service Fund. Our response is a budget with the lowest FTEs in 20 years. The first requested FTE reduction in 10 years. The first review of field operations in 20 years, and a reduction in contractors. Now, I've heard this described as the, quote, biggest ever FCC budget. It's not quite that way. The fee-generated budget is lower than last year's budget before the extraordinary items of our move and a few unfunded mandates.
Nepal has been rocked by two devastating earthquakes with major infrastructure destroyed and the most mountainous landscape in the world making it difficult for relief or information to get delivered. The first quake at 7.8 magnitude killed 8,000 people and the second frightened the victims there with many sleeping outdoors in its aftermath. With many phone lines down and electricity out, battery-operated radio receivers are the only link to the outside world in some towns and valleys. There were 263 operational community radio stations in Nepal when the earthquake struck. 20 were destroyed in the first earthquake, according to Shivam Vij in Scrollin. The World Association of Community Radio Broadcasters, AMARC, reports, quote, our staff from the Asia-Pacific office are on the ground and hard at work in collaboration with the Association of Community Radio Broadcasters in Nepal, assessing the status of community radios that have been damaged by the earthquake. Teams have been deployed in the field and are visiting some of the most severely impacted districts. More than 100 radio stations in 30 districts have been affected, are in need of urgent help, unquote. The group wrote in an online appeal for help. Norman Stockwell at Madison, Wisconsin's WORT interviews Stefan Mikasel, who is currently in Nepal, and talks about the community radio situation there.
The only one medium of information in this situation is radio. There is any electricity and people could not watch television, nor they can access newspapers or internet also. So the very important tool was radio in this situation. And when I was also in the camp, I used to listen radio about and getting information about and the risk. And the radio themselves were in the situation, the risk, because some of the FM radio stations were damaged by this earthquake. They broadcast from outside, bringing the instrument outside, and from the ground they broadcast.
AMARC is raising funds to repair studios and broadcasting equipment, repair or rebuild antennas, towers, and power generation sources, buy computers and broadcasting equipment, and buy portable audio recorders and cameras for stations in Nepal. To help, one can click on www.amarc.org. Next door neighbor India isn't suffering from a natural disaster, but its community radio stations need help just the same. Manak Jain at Scrollin reports India has only 179 community radio stations instead of the 4,000 the government promised in 2007. While Nepal has 263 community radio stations, India has only 245 commercial radio stations in a much larger country. Quote, more than 70% of the Indian population lives in villages, and a vast majority of them have little to no connectivity to internet, electricity, or telephone lines, making radio the only feasible medium for mass communication, unquote, Jane writes. One radio organizer, Shubhansri Chaudhary, the founder of CG Net Swara, an organization involved with setting up community radio and call centers to relay citizen news in Chhattisgarh, says, quote, community radio is a joke. It's not meant for communities, but for the rich and powerful who, funnily enough, don't threaten the government, but common people do, unquote.
This comes from the Associated Press. Are you ready? An unidentified wingless object traveling at high speed passed dangerously close to a Swiss Air jetliner, a Boeing 747, flying between Philadelphia and Boston, according to the airline on Friday. The pilot and co-pilot gave U.S. investigators different descriptions of the object that passed about, get this folks, 50 yards from the Boeing 747 after it had taken off from Philadelphia on August 9th. The pilot told the U.S. National Transportation Safety Board that the object was long and wingless. Co-pilot said it was more spherical. The incident took place at 23,000 feet. The plane's final destination was Zurich, Switzerland. That is from the Associated Press. So, it looks like a 747 just had a close encounter with something.
That was a clip of Art Bell's Coast to Coast AM show. Paul Rinsmondale at Radio Survivor reports that Art Bell is returning to the airwaves this July, just not on AM or FM. The 69-year-old radio star entertained conspiracy theorists for years, hosting Coast to Coast AM from 1988 until 2003. Bell, who played Eve of Destruction and other anti-war songs on his pirate radio station at Amarillo Air Force Base during the Vietnam War, eventually was syndicated on more than 500 radio stations with 15 million listeners nightly during the 1990s. In 2003, George Norrie took over the show, with Bell hosting on weekends only. After 2007, he's been off and on the radio several times, including a six-week stint on subscription-only satellite radio in 2013. On July 20th, Bell will be live on Midnight in the Desert, airing midnight to 3 a.m. Eastern Time on the internet station Dark Matter Radio, and a simulcast on the Tennessee-based Christian shortwave station WTWW. Now, on This Week in Radio News, we tune into some strange, mysterious sounds that scientists and others cannot figure out. We just heard an unidentified upsweep sound recorded by the Pacific Marine Environmental Laboratory, first heard in 1991 in the Pacific Ocean, and gets louder in spring and autumn, although it's unclear why. The next sound was recorded July 7, 1997, on just one hydrophone, an underwater microphone from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. The sound only lasted about a minute, but was heard repeatedly over that summer, but not since. Scientists believe that it could have been a massive ice quake, but they haven't ruled anything else out. They say if an animal was the source of the bloop sound, it would have to be larger than a blue whale. Our next mysterious sound is known as slowdown, first recorded May 19, 1997, and it may be an iceberg running aground, although some say it's a giant squid. The recording lasted 7 minutes, but we'll hear just a short excerpt. We're tuning into strange, unexplained sounds. Next up is one called Julia, recorded March 1st, 1999, lasted for about 15 seconds, and was loud enough to be heard by the entire Equatorial Pacific Ocean hydrophone array. Scientists suspect it might have been an Antarctic iceberg running aground. Tuning into mysterious sounds, next one is a skyquake, an unexplained sonic boom. The next mysterious sound is called UVB-76, also known as the buzzer, and it's been showing up on shortwave radios for decades, usually on the 4625 kilohertz band. Back in the water for our survey of unexplained sounds, we listened to the loneliest whale. While blue whales transmit between 10 and 39 hertz, and fin whales transmit at 20 hertz, the 52 hertz whale speaks in a much higher frequency than other whale species, so it can't communicate with other whales. Scientists have tracked the sounds throughout the Pacific Ocean. There's currently a feature-length documentary about the 52 hertz whale called 52, The Search for the Loneliest Whale, in production and due for release sometime in 2015. Let's listen to the loneliest whale in the world. Thank you. some mysterious sounds do get solved, and Australian scientists have been listening to interference noises since 1998 through a radio telescope and have been baffled so far. But 2 weeks ago, according to The Guardian, the signal source was found, a microwave oven in the kitchen at the Parkes Observatory used by staff members when they weren't looking through the radio telescope to heat up their lunch. Our last mysterious sound was recorded by a NASA student balloon. Infrasound microphones captured the mysterious hisses and whistles 22 miles above the Earth's surface in 2014. The sound is made at a 20 hertz frequency below the human hearing range, but speeding it up makes it audible. This was the first time infrasound microphones were used at such high altitudes. So it could be a sound that has existed for centuries. Scientists guess it could be a wind farm under the balloon's flight path, crashing ocean waves, wind turbulence, gravity waves, clear air turbulence, or vibrations caused by the balloon cable. Listen, and you can make your own guess.
Oh,
That was Elvis Costello's Radio Radio from this year's model from 1978. On This Week in Radio News, I'm Tom Rowe reporting from Wavefarm Radio and WGXC. The preceding show was recorded at Wavefarm's WGXC in the Hudson Valley in New York State.